Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you want to communicate with us that way. We'll try to keep an eye on Twitter a little bit more during the offseason. Usually the flow of calls is a little bit lower, so we can do a little bit more Twitter. John Schmelk, Lance Meadow with you. Lance, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are things with you?
I'm good. I must admit, I did not make it through the end of that game last night.
Oh, really? Wow.
I was watching the game on
when
the couch.
Did you conk out?
I conked out during the timeout before Alabama's potential game-winning field goal in the fourth quarter.
So you were thinking they probably would have won on the
walk-off field goal. I was fighting it. I was tired. Yeah. I had a busy weekend. And I woke up and I'm like, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. I wonder who won the game. And I looked at him like, oh, my man, he missed the field goal. Are you kidding me?
Yep.
But and we'll start there just because I think it was a fun football game.
It was very entertaining.
Just a fun national championship game in Lance. I think why I enjoyed it so much is you had two teams really – almost running pro-style systems on offense and on defense to a certain extent, more on offense once Alabama went to their true freshman quarterback at halftime, taking out a guy that's been 14-2 over 2 years, or 16-2, whatever his record was. And it was just a really gutsy move by Nick Saban to go away from your starter. But I think it was the right move. I don't think with Jalen Hurts in that game, they would have scored the 20-something points necessary to beat Georgia in that game.
Well, and Hurts also had a good track record of protecting the football, too. I think he only had, like, one interception this season or whatever it may be. So when you take that into consideration, a risky move, certainly it turned out well based on how the game played out in overtime. And I do think for a true freshman, Tua, very polished, and there was a calmness about him.
A good thrower. I mean,
in terms of how he handled pressure and everything else.
I think a couple times he held the ball a couple times too long.
That's fair.
Like,
yeah.
he took that terrible sack at the start of overtime, which frankly
but
almost
made up for it.
Cost Alabama the game. But then he made the unbelievable throw down the sideline from another true freshman who in 2 years is going to be a top 10 pick in the draft unless something strange happens between now and then. He made that beautiful deep pass earlier in the game for Georgia. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun to see these two teams fight it out in the SEC for the next few years. You have two coaches. Obviously, they come from the same tree. Both
Saban
guys
beats up his assistants, by
exactly.
the way. That continues. 12-0.
And both these guys, though, Lance, like to run pro systems and pro-style defenses. So you're going to see over the next 3 or 4 years, and this I'm bringing it back to the Giants, folks, you are going to see Alabama and Georgia players on the offensive line and defensive line and linebacker in the secondary be all over these draft boards the next few years because both these teams are stacked depth-wise and they do things that NFL teams want to see their players do. So you're going to see a lot of these two teams' players in the draft the next few years and throwing Clemson too. They obviously, their defensive players have been all over the place the last few years. It'll just be a lot of fun to watch in the SEC.
Well, if you look at what Alabama utilized last night, they utilized a lot of freshmen in terms of the receiving core, the quarterback core. So, I mean, forget the draft down the road. For the next few years, assuming Nick Saban hangs around, he's going to have a nice core that he can rely on because those kids are not leaving.
It's Alabama.
I know it's Alabama, but what I'm saying is normally you're used to the kids that help you win a national championship
game.
They're leaving.
Yeah.
That's not
going to
be the case. Because a lot of the core is extremely young.
Well, defensively, Georgia have some guys that leave. Their running backs will probably come out in the draft.
But Chubb, yeah.
All their receivers were young. Throwing it to Riley Ridley, who was a freshman from the true freshman quarterback. The Georgia left tackle, people say, will probably be drafted as a starting guard this year in the first couple days of the draft. So he's going to come out. But just a fun game. And I thought it was a high quality of play, which is what I enjoyed, too. It wasn't necessarily sloppy. Obviously, Alabama's first half play on offense wasn't something you would write home about, but I thought it was a highly competitive, hard-fought game between two teams that were playing their rear ends off that I thought, for people that are more NFL fans than college fans, and I would definitely put myself in that category, to see them not run a lot of that college-y stuff made it more fun for me to watch the game.
Yeah, a lot of the fundamentals were being showcased last night. Plus, I also thought there was some real good, solid tackling on both sides from a defensive standpoint. I mean, these kids were not shying away from laying each other out.
And legal hits, too,
yeah,
by the way.
Correct.
There wasn't one targeting penalty in that whole game.
No, it was just hard hits. Yeah. And also special teams, if you even watched how hard they were hitting there. You know, so that was nice to see, considering, you know, I think we're used to in the National Football League some guys trying to cross that boundary line where you have a gray area of what is legal and what is not. So that was refreshing, I thought, throughout the course of the game last night.
And, of course, the other story is the Giants head coaching search. It continues. So far, the Giants have officially interviewed four people,
correct,
both coordinators from New England,
yep,
McDaniels and Patricia. Pat Shurmur from the Vikings, and, of course, Steve Spagnuolo, the in-house candidate. We might have word of another candidate at some point during the show. When we do, we'll let you know. We could talk about that as well. And, Lance, I haven't been on for about a week, so I wanted to give my take real quick on the candidates.
Well, you've been sleeping, clearly. So
Not enough, apparently.
That happened. Yes.
You know, Steve Spagnuolo, I think the Giants know what they have. He's done it before. He's somebody they're comfortable with. Obviously, the past results aren't necessarily there with how it gone for him. And Pat Shurmur is somebody that I think one thing you would worry about or think about, not necessarily worry, but think about, is that he also runs the West Coast offense. Do you still want that type of offensive system here with the Giants if you want to go with somebody like Shurmur? I think that's something you think about. And his prior success with the Browns, it's the Browns now. So
it's only so much stock you can put in there.
It's the Browns. You know, he didn't have a ton of success as head coach either. But he's somebody that I think is a very safe pick and somebody that's been in the league for a long time. He's been a head coach. But again, I think it depends what type of offense you want to run. Because if you bring in Pat Shurmur, you know what you're getting on the offensive side of the ball. You're getting that West Coast style of offense.
However, with that being said, I mean, if you look at what Minnesota's done this season, John, they ran the ball effectively. And even though there is West Coast elements to that, I mean, the way they utilized Adam Thielen, Stephon Diggs, you know, they didn't necessarily shy away from the deep ball.
Kyle Rudolph.
Case Keenum, correct, air it out. So, I mean, I get that. It's interesting. Paul and I yesterday were talking about Pat Shurmur in depth. We did not touch on the West Coast element, so I think that's an interesting factor. But I agree with you. I mean, in terms of, obviously, the four candidates that have been interviewed, with the exception of Spags, and by the way, Spags and Pat Shurmur are connected because Shurmur was his OC when Spags was the Rams head coach. But Shurmur's attractive to me, John, because if you go back to John Mara's comments at the press conference, and John Mara didn't come out and say that they weren't going to consider individuals that had no previous head coaching experience, but he did say that that's something that obviously they're going to take into consideration, especially after what happened with Ben McAdoo. And Pat Shurmur, to me, gets the check marks in those boxes. This is a guy that has commanded a team in Cleveland.
Yep.
The success wasn't there, like you said, but he won 9 games in 2 seasons, much more so than most coaches could say. And he also has done a great job developing quarterbacks and developing offenses.
Yeah,
and that I don't think could be dismissed either.
Yeah, he was with McNabb in Philadelphia when he was there.
Well, yeah, we're talking about early in his career.
Yeah,
and then he was also with, obviously, under Chip Kelly with Sam Bradford. And
he was at the Rams at Bradford, too.
Correct, exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's another guy I would give him credit for working with. Case Keenum is still young. It's not like he's an old guy. And, I mean, look at
almost 30, though.
But look at what he's also done for Case
Keenum. He's done a great job.
When Keenum has had stability.
And by the way,
other stages of his career.
And there were some rumors out there that, oh, it's a package deal with Shurmur and Case Keenum.
There was that story that came out, yes.
Folks, let me tell you something. If a team says to Pat Shurmur, we're going to give you a head coaching job, but no, we don't want to sign Case Keenum, and I don't know what the Giants would think about that, but to think you would get rid of Eli Manning for Case Keenum, I'm not sure if that's really the direction you would go. If you're going to make a move, make the move for a younger guy, you know what I mean? But I don't think Pat Shurmur is going to say, I refuse to take this job unless I come with Case Keenum.
Well, not if he wants to be a head coach.
I don't see that happening. Do you?
No. I think that story to me, John, was more of if Shurmur, because remember, he's getting consideration across the board.
If he takes a team without a quarterback, right?
Absolutely.
Right.
Then isn't it attractive to sell the team? Hey, guys.
Sure.
Look at what I did with Case Keenum. He's a free agent. I think we should consider perhaps signing him if you guys are on board with taking me in. Now, I'm going to play the hypothetical game because obviously the court of public opinion likes that, so I'm going to placate to them. If Pat Shurmur said to the Giants, if Case Keenum can't land the starting job, which I think he can, and I also would not rule out the Vikings keeping him, by the way.
I think all that's possible.
Okay?
I agree.
I don't think it's a stretch to say, you know what, it wouldn't hurt to have an experienced backup if he's willing to take a job.
Absolutely.
And have him along with Eli, if the Giants keep Eli, mentor a young quarterback.
I agree.
That I don't think there's anything wrong with under those circumstances.
Correct. And then you have the other two people that interviewed, the two guys up in New England. Obviously, McDaniels has prior head coaching experience with the Broncos, where you look at the wins and losses and the record and you're not wowed by it. But if you look at the Broncos' quarterback situation for the years he was there, you were a little bit more impressed with the job he did in Denver, given the juggling he had to do there. You know, he won a playoff game with Tim Tebow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty impressive.
It is.
Be honest.
No, I'm not going to doubt that. I always remember that play against the Steelers where it was the short pass to Demaryius Thomas, and he ran about 100 yards. Everybody tends to forget about that. I'm not trying to, you know, bring down Tim Tebow.
That's okay.
Well,
okay
I just
that.
Think
it's
that
fine.
That's an important element.
Just own it.
The fact.
Own it.
Okay, I will own it. I am. I'm bringing down Tim Tebow, okay? Because everybody wants to crown him. Demaryius Thomas did all the heavy lifting. And by the way, Ryan Clark didn't play because of his sickle cell issue. Remember the thick air? the thin air, excuse me, in Denver. So, you know, those are important facts that you have to bring to the table.
Honestly, but, honestly, I did not remember the Ryan Clark part of that
story. I'm telling you. That's why I'm here.
Something tells me you've had a couple Tim Tebow debates on your Sirius show.
Oh, my goodness gracious. You know me too well. Please do not open up Pandora's box on this program.
I will not. I will not.
No, but your point is well taken in terms of what you were getting at. He also, you know, parted ways with Jay Cutler. Here's the thing that I think people forget with Josh McDaniels. When he was in Denver, John, he had front office influence, okay? I think he learned from that experience, and I also think that clearly if he comes here, the Giants are not going to hand him free rein. So if he went into a situation where he just uses his X's and O's and worries about how to use personnel instead of determining the personnel, that I think is a different way to look at Josh McDaniels than what happened in Denver.
And then you have Matt Patricia, obviously, the Patriots defensive coordinator. He does not have head coaching experience, unlike some of these other guys. But he's somebody that's obviously done a lot with this New England defense, with a lot of changing personnel over the years, and he's kept them competitive from year to year. And we've seen he's been their defensive coordinator since 2012, and he's had years where the year begins, and you're like, wow, that Patriot defense looks like they're not going to be able to stop anybody. Then by the end of the year, they're getting by, and they're okay. So people argue now, is that Bill Belichick or is that Matt Patricia? And I think that's always the question when you talk about these New England coaches. You know, Bill Belichick can coach every position probably better than everybody else in the league. That's just the way he is. And, you know, the question is, how heavily involved was Bill Belichick on the defense? Patriot players rave about Matt Patricia. They love him. So that's the other candidate the Giants have interviewed so far.
And this is one of those seasons, by the way, that lays out your point about the defense turning around. Because early in the year, the New England defense.
Civ.
Correct. And now the way that he regrouped and they were able to bounce back, I think, says a lot. And what you were also touching on, John, I think is an interesting point, which is why I think people are a little concerned about a Bill Belichick assistant. They don't have the best track record when they do go on to their own. Now, Bill O'Brien, you know, let's see what happens with a healthy Deshaun Watson.
Quarterback issues.
Correct.
There.
So you have to take that into consideration.
In fact, a lot of his disciples have gone to places where they've had a rough quarterback situations.
Romeo Crennel was with Kansas City for a little bit. He didn't necessarily have a full answer there.
And I'm not sure if I would consider Crennel a Belichick disciple. I almost consider him more of a Parcells guy.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
If I just look at it. He was in New England as the defensive coordinator.
I know what you mean. Charlie Weiss is another guy.
More of a college coaching pedigree than necessarily the NFL. And he's also had guys like Nick Saban who have worked with him. But, you know, that's more of an Alabama than necessarily what happened with the Dolphins, which a lot of people point to. So mixed results is, I guess, where I'm getting at.
And I'll tell you what, I'm not sure if it was Nick Saban's call or the medical staff's call, but Nick Saban's could still be coaching the Dolphins now if Drew Brees had signed there. Yeah. They didn't. I guess they failed them on a physical, or they just got scared off by the physical.
About the shoulder, yeah.
Whatever the details were, I mean, if they would have signed Drew Brees, Nick Saban might still be coaching the Dolphins today.
Yeah. Quarterbacks changed.
Said they wound up with Dante Culpepper, and that didn't work out too well.
It does. Well, it worked out for Minnesota, just not necessarily during his Miami stint.
That's true.
Dante Culpepper won me a fantasy championship. Don't you forget about that.
And I'm sure that's the thing that's the crowning achievement of his career.
Without a doubt.
I'm sure he looks back. That's what he thinks
about.
Absolutely.
I mean, him and Jermaine Wiggins, what they've done, people don't know the war story.
Culpepper to Randy Moss, yes.
Oh, boy.
Robert Smith running the football.
There you go. Those are the good old days. That's when the dynasty began.
Leroy Horde in goal line situations.
Wow, you're really going back
here. That's pretty
good. Wait, didn't they have – who was the fullback? Jim starts with an F, the last name.
Not Jim Finn.
No. Maybe it was Kleinhasser?
Jim Kleinsaucer.
Kleinsaucer. That was it. Yes.
Jim Kleinsaucer.
Jim Kleinsaucer. Fullback. All right. We completed
the
whole
Vikings. It's actually a shame. I don't want to get on a Viking tilt here. But
well, come on. This is Vikings.com.
It really disappointed me when they lost to the Falcons in that NFC Championship game. I really thought they would have beaten the Broncos by a couple touchdowns in that Super Bowl. And, of course, Gary Anderson, who, you know, I don't think he missed a kick all year, right, in that game, kicking that kick. And he missed a veritable chip shot. Tough.
Oh, listen, those are how games are won and lost. How many times do we talk about special teams mishaps?
Was that Gary or Mort?
I want to say it was Mort.
Because Gary was in Minnesota for a while, but then I think Mort might have taken over him at the end.
I'll look it up. For some reason, I think it was Mort and Anderson, but we could look it up. So you weren't a fan of the Dirty Birds? Is that what you're saying?
They were fine, but they were never going to beat Denver that year.
Well, they also had, remember, issues with the secondary rendezvous the night before, if memory serves me correct.
Stuff in trunks?
May have had something to do with that.
All right, folks, 201-939-4513. Anything you want to talk about, we can. We could do draft stuff as well. I've watched about 5 or 6 games of Josh Rosen this year. I'm not done yet.
Okay.
And I also went back and I watched about 3 games of Davis Webb for last year. The work is ongoing. But if you want to call in and talk about that, we can do that too.
Morton Anderson, by the way.
It was Morton. It was Morton. Yes. Okay. Well, that's why I asked. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, maybe that was Morton. I think he showed up at the end of his career. But he was with the Falcons before that, Morton. Anyway, 201-939-4513. I digress. And we get to you on the phones. Let's go to Max in Manhattan. Max, what's going on?
What's up, guys? How are you?
Doing great, Max. How are you, pal?
Good, good, good. Thank you. So the way I kind of look at this Giants head coaching situation, once the dust settles, probably is going to come down to 4 guys until Patricia gets denounced in Detroit, which I think is inevitable. They just have to lose or win the Super Bowl. So it's really 3. It's probably going to be Shermer and then Wilkes and McDaniels. I don't know. To me, though, you know, Shermer's kind of like that safe pick, but especially after hiring Gettleman and not going with like a Lewis Riddick or a New Age guy, I think it would be tough for the Maras to hire someone like Shermer and say anything's really going to be different.
Max, hold on. How is bringing somebody that's never been in this building before not something different?
Well, I mean, and right, like I said, technically, yeah, his face is different, but you're bringing in a West Coast guy, kind of a monotone guy, not exactly a Mike Tomlin who's going to get you pumped up on your feet. You know what I mean? I don't know. Again, yeah, it's a different face, but you know, it would be tough to find too many guys closer to McAdoo, I think, than Shermer. Same type of offense, seems like the same type of personality. You know, at least if you bring in a McDaniels, it's a younger guy, kind of takes the room by storm, as Maris said he was looking for. I don't think it's a bad candidate by any means.
No, I hear
but
you.
I just don't think it's different. And when we haven't, you know, we've struggled to make the playoffs, and the only year recently we did make the playoffs, it was probably more to do with our defense than it was our offense. I don't know. I just really think someone like McDaniels, I even think Patricia, it looks like he's going to go to Detroit. I don't know what you guys have heard about that.
That's the rumor.
There have been some reports, yeah.
But I even think he would be a good candidate. I don't know. I after bringing in kind of a Gettleman who's kind of the, you know, go with the flow type of guy as far as what they've had here, I just don't think how bringing in someone like Shermer is saying, you know, we have a new plan, we have a new idea, as opposed to the one that hasn't been working.
Well, listen, Shermer's been with a lot of different teams. I understand there's West Coast components, but I mean, I don't look at him as, oh, now this is a stale approach and it's going to be a continuation of what he's done.
It's not like Shermer was one of McCarthy's assistants or something like that.
I mean, he's not from that school of thought, I mean, in terms of that coaching pedigree, and he's worked with a variety of different quarterbacks who have had a variety of different backgrounds. So I think there's some stock there. And
I think he's more of an Andy Reid guy than I would think anything else, because he was with Reid so long in Philadelphia.
In Philadelphia, right. So if you want to put him under that umbrella.
Yeah, he was in Philly for 7 years.
But like I said,
so.
I mean, he's also worked with a variety of other. For example, he was under Chip Kelly. You know, and Chip Kelly is part of that new school of thought in terms of offensive philosophy, too.
Good point.
Clearly, I think he's evolved as a coach. And, you know, Max, you mentioned that, you know, a rah-rah guy that maybe is going to win the battles at the podium, which, by the way, doesn't always translate to the football field. But, I mean, does Bill Belichick, is he a rah-rah guy at the podium to you?
I mean, that's kind of the easy comparison.
Well,
but no,
my point
right
is
that,
my point is, just because you have a guy that speaks so well to the media and wows you, it doesn't necessarily you're in a
but
much better position
even the
to win
media,
football games.
Well, first of all, I heard something, I forget who said, maybe Art Stapleton, who I like a lot, who said it, and I agreed with him. And it's almost like and you correct me if I'm wrong, because you guys know more than I've forgotten, but, you know, to correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like the way you kind of conduct yourself to the media is, you know, they said in a way, but dial down the way that you conduct yourself to your team. It's your personality, the way you talk to the public. The way
Max, I would say there's some truth to that. And I also think, you know, people want to poo-poo that a lot. How you handle the media is part of the job, too.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's totally part of the job, because it creates a picture with your fans and everybody around the team of the type of person you are. And when things go well, it doesn't really matter. But when things go poorly, that's when it does matter. And I think that's why you didn't hear much about it when the Giants were 11-5 last year. But I think when things start to go poorly and then, you know, that sort of stuff doesn't go well for you, I think that hurts you a little bit.
Yeah, because you can't use the record as a shield anymore.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is some relevance to that. However, I think at the same time, there's a lot of coaches that are also very protective of their players. And therefore, they're not going to give everything to the media that the media wants. And then
Which is
they're
fine.
Much more loose once you take them away from the podium.
But it's also how you don't give anything to the media. There are ways to say things to the media without actually saying things to the media. You know what I mean?
Well, it's an art. Dealing with the media is an art.
Absolutely it is. No question.
So I guess then I would ask you guys, how do you look at this search right now? Again, it's tough with Patricia. But, you know, how do you guys then look at it? Do you think, despite Wilkes' inexperience, he's out? I don't see how they hire another first, second-year coordinator, even though Wilkes does seem like a favorite. Do you think it's McDaniels? Do you think Shurmur does get the look? How do you guys look at the odds for it?
Thank you, Max. Appreciate the call. I will go back to the quote that John Mara gave. And this is the quote he gave. I think, obviously, it has to be somebody who has either had head coaching experience or at least has been a coordinator for a significant period of time, because I think if you don't have that, the odds are really stacked against you. It's not possible for you to succeed without that, but I think the more experience that the individual has as either a head coach or as a coordinator on either side of the ball, I think it is very important. Dave Gettleman has stated he thinks is important, but he also said it is not a deal breaker, which is similar to what John Mara said here. The odds are just stacked against you. It doesn't mean you can't do it. So I think when you look at guys that don't have a lot of experience, but I think all the guys that they've interviewed so far, Lance, have been coordinators for a significant period of time or have been head coaches. So I don't think the guys that have been currently interviewed have that issue. We'll see who else they interview. Maybe we'll have another name for you by the end of the show. But it helps. But if you have the right guy – and I think I've read people tweet this before. I forget who they attribute it to. You'd rather get the right guy maybe 2 years early than wait and not get him at all. You know what I mean?
Because you didn't want to take the chance or you didn't want to take the risk, and then he gained a little bit more
like
experience.
Like McVay and Tomlin, then, things like that.
No, I think that's a fair point. The other thing that I'll add is more from Gettleman's press conference, John, if you recall. Gettleman talked about the importance of the relationship between the general manager and the head coach. So that's why I think a lot of people are speculating with Steve Wilkes, because he clearly has an established relationship based on their Carolina days. But with that being said, I also thought it was very interesting. This was one of the best stories I thought Gettleman told. He inherited Ron Rivera when he became the Panthers head coach, and he talked about how, knowing that he wasn't going to hire a new head coach, he had to then develop a relationship with Ron Rivera. They went out for lunch, like one of the first days that he took the job, Gettleman, and it was like a blind date. And they sat down, they talked football, and then all of a sudden the relationship blossomed. So the reason I'm telling you that story is, I think with Gettleman, you have an example, John, of while the relationship is important, you have an example of him working with a coach that he had no prior relationship with. So my point is, while everybody wants to point to Steve Wilkes, I think that we have an example of how Gettleman has accepted somebody that he has no prior history with, and he's made it work.
Of course.
So that doesn't mean that Wilkes is clearly the front runner, and there's nobody else that should be given any credence whatsoever in terms of this search.
Right, and he's somebody that was a coordinator for a year, assistant head coach for two seasons. So that's something you have to kind of, you know, take a look at her. I think actually assistant head coach, I think for three seasons,
2015, 16, and 17.
Now, is he still technically assistant head coach and defensive coordinator?
That's according to what I've seen in terms of his title. Tough. Yeah, assistant head coach and defensive coordinator. He was the defensive backs coach
for three
before
years.
That.
I don't know how much, you know, ownership will put credence into assistant head coach and what that position means. I think it's different based on whatever team you're with. I think Steve Spagnuolo, wasn't he assistant head coach with the Ravens when he was there as a secondaries coach? Or
he
at some
may
point,
have
he
had
been,
some
he
type of additional title. I don't know what it is. But
and those titles can be ambiguous from team to team, and they can mean very different things.
Yeah, I mean, you know, labels are all what you make of them and what you do with them, not necessarily what you have. The other thing I was going to add is, if you also are talking about a defensive-minded coach, I'm not just talking about Steve Wilkes, John, then I think the conversation, unlike a Pat Shurmur, becomes – what's your offensive staff
and that's
like?
Important
and you have to lay that out to ownership and the GM,
and frankly same for these offensive coaches, what's your defensive staff going to look like?
Absolutely.
And I think too, the Giants, I'm not going to say that they're going to be impacted by what happened here, but John Mara even said this himself at a press conference where he thinks it's a lot for a coach to handle play calling and handle being the head coach at the same time. He said that before at a press conference. I don't have the quote in front of me, but I remember he said that. So I wonder if whomever the coach is going to be, if he's going to be more of that, as Dave Gettleman said over and over again, be that CEO type of individual and the leader and the organizer, but hire the right coordinators, which is why I think what staff you bring in is a huge part of these interviews. And I think that's going to be a lot of the important questions. Well, yeah, you could be a great head coach. If you have two coordinators that are not very good, guess what? If you're a good head coach, it's not going to matter because you can't do everyone's job for them. You need to bring in a good staff, and that's a huge part of it.
Well, and that's why I always use the Rams as an example, what Sean McVay did with Wade Phillips.
Sure.
But the other better example, and I touched on this yesterday, and I'll rehash it, is what Philly did, John. Because Doug Peterson, he was a play caller in Kansas City. Now, he's still calling the plays in Philly, but what did he do? He brought in Frank Reich, had plenty of offensive coordinator experience going back to his days with the Chargers, and he's got a former OC as his quarterback's coach in John DeFilippo. That's a lot of firepower and knowledge that you have on the offensive side of the ball. So even though Peterson wants to be involved in play calling, he has a lot of other playmakers in the form of coaches that he can lean on, is what I'm talking about there.
And they went out and hired a top-notch defensive coordinator in Jim Schwartz, one of the best defensive coordinators in football.
Yeah.
So who you hire on your staff matters. So let's go to Joe in Pennsylvania. He's up next. Hi, Joe.
Hey, great to talk to you guys. Love the show. Happy New Year.
Same to you, Joe.
Starting with what you talked about, the game last night, there was two players that impressed me. I don't know if they're coming out. There was a defensive tackle and from Alabama.
Payne?
And I mean, he looked like Reggie White pushing Georgia lineman in the backfield. I don't know if you know who that guy was.
Are you talking about Payne? Payne?
Yeah, that might be him.
He's good. He's coming out, and he will be a first-round pick.
Yeah, he looked there. And
he's
the
a
other
tackle.
Guy from the running back from Georgia, Michelle, there, he looked pretty good too, you know.
And it's funny, Joe, you mentioned Michelle. Sony Michelle is his full name. A lot of people had Chubb ahead of him, as Chubb more of a second-round pick, Sony Michelle maybe more as a three or a four. I would be surprised, especially given the success of Alvin Kamara this year, and he plays a similar role for them than Kamara did over at Tennessee, if Michelle got out of the second round in this draft. I think he's going to be a good pro.
Oh, he showed great power plus running. Did you see him tight roping all the way down that sideline going 90 miles an hour?
I don't know how he did that.
Yeah.
I don't know how he
play.
Stopped on a dime at that sideline and didn't drift out of bounds. That was an unbelievable play.
Right. Okay, going on from there before I get cut up, with the coaching stuff you were just talking about, you know, there's just so much stuff, even with Shermer, be a lot of familiarity that he was with Andy Reid and Emmett. He could end up keeping Spags there if he gets it, or he'd definitely consider him, I'll bet you.
Yeah, I'm sure he will, because you know what? I'll have to look it up, but they must have overlapped on that staff from 2002 to 2008.
Definitely.
They would have had to.
They were together with Andy Reid, and I don't know if I, you know, Andy Reid, you know, his disciples, I just don't know, because I don't know about Andy Reid. He's great during the regular season, but he just can't win it in the playoffs. And talking about the coaches in the playoffs, I don't know who the defensive coordinator is for the Falcons and for the Saints. I know we're interviewing the one from the Carolina. No, they're impressive with their teams this year and their team speed. I don't know who they are. So, but getting to my question there, the question would be with Mr. Eli Manning there, you know, with his last couple years going here, if our general manager now, do you think he should shop Eli regardless whether he wants to keep him or not? Especially if he is impressed with one of the young quarterbacks?
Well, I mean, I'm sure he's going to – not necessarily – I think shopping him is the wrong word, but I think you get a feel for what the value would be. But I don't think you actively try to trade Eli Manning unless you decide that that's the path you want to go down. That is a truck that you can't back up into the spot. You know what I mean? Once you go down that road, you got to go.
Joe, if Arizona, Denver, you know, some of these teams that need a quarterback, if they call him up and they want to see whether or not he has an interest in trading Eli Manning, yeah, as any GM will tell you, you have to field that phone call, and there's no crime in listening. But, you know, the other thing that I would throw back to you, Joe, is when you say, you know, should they test the market with him, what do you think realistically you're going to get in return for a 37-year-old quarterback?
Yes, but I'm just saying, if I was the general manager, should I be doing that? Especially if I'm impressed with one of these younger quarterbacks.
But I still go back to it. In order to trade a player, there has to be some type of a return, a reward.
Right.
So my question to you, Joe, is what do you think a 37-year-old quarterback is going to get you if you do ultimately choose to take the bait and trade him?
Well, the first thing I would be is I like Mr. Gettleman. I would be studying that film if I want to keep him, and how impressed I am with these younger quarterbacks before I would decide on that.
There's a question, Joe, I'm with you.
You cut me there, too, whether we should let him go, that we can get something good for him if the price is high enough, say a first.
That's
or
not
so,
happening.
Or if we should just want to keep him and let him run out, and then where his value goes down. There are big questions there at my part. That's what I'm saying. I'm for Eli Manning, but you got to always put the team first, even if it was Lawrence Taylor up on the block.
Of course. Thank you, Joe. Yeah. Appreciate the call.
So one other thing here. I just want to say, would you take this trade? This is a good one here. The Giants get the fourth, the 33rd and 35th from Cleveland, and Cleveland gets our second.
So you get two of Cleveland's first-round picks? Is that what you're saying?
We get Cleveland's fourth pick, which is in the first round, and we get their 33rd and 35th for our second.
For second overall.
Okay. So three picks for one, essentially.
I don't think Cleveland's trading both there.
But would you do it?
If I'm the Giants?
Yeah.
I think it depends on what your evaluation of the players are on number two. I think it depends. If there's a guy there at two that you think is a franchise-changing caliber player and you don't want to lose him, you pick him there, okay? Yep. You don't get fancy. You don't screw around. You pick that player.
We're just in a great spot. That's all I
said. Sure, of course. You've got options. You want to have options.
With players, everything. Thanks for taking my call,
guys. All right, Joe. Appreciate the phone call.
Can I try to answer the question that you tried to answer?
Sure. Well, I'm waiting for somebody to answer the question. So.
Well, you're not going to get a first-round pick.
I'm in agreement with you there.
You might be able to get a middle-round pick, a day-two pick, maybe.
I don't think that's a stretch.
I think that's possible.
But I think that's your ceiling, though.
Yeah. While the Giants would cover whatever signing bonus is left in the contract, if that would ever happen, the other team would have to pick up the base salary, which is not huge, but it is a significant amount of money. So you take all those things into consideration. And here's the thing, Lance. Whatever the Giants ending up deciding to do with Eli is going to have a lot to do with what they think about the quarterbacks in the draft, which I'm sure they haven't even gotten close to making that determination yet. Dave Gettleman's trying to hire a general manager. He's not sitting there evaluating Josh Rosen.
Well, he's right now a head coach. I mean, he already has that title locked up.
He's trying to hire a head coach.
Yeah.
He's not sitting there evaluating college quarterback tape. Now, once he has everybody in place, then he'll do it. And, by the way, he'll probably have whatever offensive coaches end up being on the staff next year take a look at those guys, too, and get their opinion on those guys. So
makes 100% sense.
That's something the Giants will have to decide down the road. But here's the beauty part. The league year doesn't start until March. You got plenty of time to figure all that out.
Free agency first has to get done.
And just with the way this works, Joe, once you start calling other teams, engaging their interest in a player, stuff like that is a tendency to leak. And given how messy everything was with Eli, not starting in beginning of December, they're going to try to make this as clean as possible. So I think they're going to be very, very cautious in how they handle this whole situation because it's an emotional situation. It's a delicate situation. And I think Dave Gettleman understands the gravity of whatever decision he does happen to make, whether it's keeping him, if he doesn't come back next year, who knows? I remember John Mara has said he wants Eli back. Eli has says he wants to come back. And Dave Gettleman said at first sight, though he has to look at more tape, he still thinks he can play. So to me, all arrows point to him still being here next year. But we don't know for sure until he actually is.
Yeah, I'm paraphrasing, but he said he watched the Eagles game. He said if that's not a mirage and he didn't think it was based on what he saw, then, it's status quo.
And he said he have to look at the tape and look at the other games over the year to see if it was a mirage. But given the fact that Eli said he wants to be here, John Mara said he wants him here, Dave Gettleman said unless I look at the tape and my impression is contradicted, he's going to be here. I think you're looking at a pretty high percentage chance that he's going to be here.
And I don't disagree with that. The only thing that I will say, and I've brought this example up multiple times, the mindset of individuals in January could be very different than the mindset of individuals a few months later.
Absolutely.
Case in point, John, the Eagles entered the 2016 season with their depth chart the following. Sam Bradford, Chase Daniel, and they drafted Carson Wentz.
Yep.
All of a sudden, Teddy Bridgewater gets hurt, and then their plans change. Now, am I saying that something similar could happen where a quarterback gets hurt elsewhere and then a team wants to go after Eli Manning a few weeks before the season starts? I'm not saying that it's going to happen. I'm just saying that just because you hear things in January doesn't mean that everything is locked and completed for what's going to transpire in the months ahead. It's a fluid league. Things change day to day, week to week.
And guess what? Kerry Collins was a Giants starting quarterback until they drafted Eli Manning.
Oh, Kurt Warner, too. In terms of another guy.
Yeah, but Kerry Collins was on the roster.
Yeah. No, in terms of what happened before the season, if you saw it. No, you're right,
So things do have a tendency to be fluid.
And that's why you
and
have
I was
to
just
take
trying
that into
to back up your point.
No,
exactly.
I agree with you.
201-939-4513. Tim in Jackson, New Jersey. Hi, Tim.
Hi.
Hi,
how
Tim.
How are you guys?
We're
doing
great.
Right, Tim.
I got a question. The Giants will name Jim Caldwell offensive coordinator, name Dom Capers defensive coordinator, and name Jack McDaniels head coach.
Thank you, Tim.
Okay.
I think
interesting
you put some,
prediction.
Appreciate the call. I think you definitely listed some guys there that have a lot of NFL experience.
Well,
you've
got three head coaches, right?
Yeah.
On staff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Capers, just to provide background, was just let go as Packers defensive coordinator.
And quite frankly, and I'm not killing Dom Capers, but if you look at the Packers' results on defense over the past 5 or 6 years, I think that gives you a little bit of pause.
Yeah. I mean, listen, he's dealt with some injuries. I remember the year the Giants played him.
No argument.
Going to his seventh linebacker and his 15th corner, but excuses aside, I agree they've been very up and down, and part of that has been their philosophy of not necessarily being aggressive in free agency.
I agree.
And trying to build teams solely through the draft.
And I think that'll change now, by the way.
Well, the new GM, who was the previous front office executive that was bumped up, has said that they're going to be more aggressive. And by the way, I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to emphasize this, and I wrote this on Twitter, and I'm curious your thoughts.
And you've been writing you've been very active on Twitter the last few days. A lot of, like, no one likes the new 260 the 130 character limit.
Oh, advantage of it, yes.
Oh my goodness!
Oh, please,
the paragraphs.
It's not that bad. Oh,
holy
my goodness.
Cow!
Well, look, the hyperbole on this program. I'm not surprised to hear.
I need a bookmark to get through your tweets.
Yeah, you got to read another sentence. Oh my goodness! So you got time? I love it. You got time to scroll through every Knicks. Blog in America to make sure that you've got the right subjects, but you can't read an extra sentence I put in a tweet. But I get
not
back to
yours.
My point. Well, yeah, you should have a warning before you read my tweets. That goes without saying. The old school franchises, John, and what I'm referring to is the Packers, the Steelers, and the Giants. And this is in reaction to, and I know we've discussed this, about Dave Gettleman being a continuation of the previous regime. But when you look at those three organizations, what jumps out to me is they have a way and a structure of doing business.
Sure.
And that means that they like to groom a lot of people internally. And if you've noticed, a lot of those organizations have had people that have left, have gone on to get experience elsewhere, and then are brought back because they're still a part of that structure.
Mm-hmm.
So the Packers promoted somebody from within, but also if you remember Green Bay, when they got their previous general manager, who was just – moved to another position. He was with the Seahawks organization. He started with Green Bay. He left to go to Seattle. You know, John Schneider, who's now the Seahawks general manager, he started with Green Bay. Wouldn't be surprising if maybe before his career ends, he winds up back in Green Bay. And the same thing, Gettleman started with the Giants. He got his own experience with Carolina. He comes back. They all have those similar philosophies that they invest in people, they groom.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that it's the continuation of everything that they've done in the previous regimes. That's my point. That they like to give them opportunities, spread their wings, go out and get experience, but then trust the fact that they know how to evaluate talent and they understand the process
well,
that they go
just
through.
Just like New England. I mean,
yeah,
McDaniels left and came back. Their offensive line coach left and came back.
Correct.
I mean, it's just the way it goes.
Yeah. And I just think that part of that is just being around the NFL for so long,
yeah.
And those organizations have a lot of similarities with one another. Uh-oh. What does this mean? Oh, really?
I have a bad feeling about this.
Goodness.
Hallelujah.
Wonderful.
Losing his mind.
So in on those lobsters.
He wasn't right.
Got somebody else on the line from Maine. Should have went to that person
I am
first.
Happy.
You're a madman.
And here we go.
Charlie in Portland, Maine. How you doing, Chuckles?
Hey, guys. Hey, Lance. I'm the only one from Maine. Come
on. Well, you're going to find out in a few minutes there's actually other people in Maine.
Now, Charles, here's the thing. Everyone tries to stay so far away from you. It might seem like you're the only person in Maine, but trust me, there are other people in the state. They're just trying to keep their distance.
And I don't blame them.
Hey, I got two things.
Yes, please.
Okay, first thing
thankfully
is
it's
Eli.
Not three.
Eli, for one, has the upper hand of this whole situation because he is due a $5 million roster bonus, and he has a no-trade clause.
That's very true.
So he can wait and get his $5 million roster bonus unless the Giants want to cut him. And then what I would do if I was him, I'd get the $5 million roster bonus, and then I would waive my trade clause and see where I want to go, like to Jacksonville. And the reason why I think he would probably go to Jacksonville, because Jacksonville would give him a 2 to 3 year deal. He wouldn't have to look over his shoulder of another quarterback coming in. He would be the guy, and he would be handed over to the keys to the Jacksonville's offense. If he stays with the Giants, I don't think Gettleman, they're going to give him any guarantees that he's going to be a starting quarterback for the whole year of 2018.
I mean,
so,
Charlie, I think you'll have that conversation with Dave Gettleman. I don't know what that conversation is going to be.
How can any quarterback go into a season feeling secure, even if they told you at the beginning of the year that you're going to be the quarterback for the entire year, Charlie? Come on. I mean, things drastically change. You're going to tell me that any player is going to believe that if he throws an interception in every single game to start the year and they're mid-year and they're winless, that there's not a chance the guy can lose his job?
And Charlie, and by the way, I don't think Eli has a problem with competition. I don't think that was ever his issue. I think Eli has no problem with going into a season and saying, look, I'll compete against this guy, and if I'm the better quarterback, I play. If he's the better quarterback, I'll play. I think his problem is when he – and I think this was his issue when, you know, the whole move with Geno Smith got made. He goes, look, I'm not trying to win games, and if I'm not being put out there to win a game and, you know, you're not putting the players out there that give you the best chance to win a game, I think that's where the problem is. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. But what I'm saying is if he goes to Jacksonville, he's the man. You know, yeah, because if he throws 100 interceptions in in 2 games or something, then that might change. But the thing is, he knows he still can play, and he will play, and he's Eli Manning. But I just think he's got the upper hand, and I think he's going to go where he feels he can win. And if he goes to Jacksonville with that defense, all they need is a quarterback. He could win a chip there or maybe two. In the next couple of years.
That's hard to do. It's
hard. Charlie, it's easy.
Charlie, remember, the Steelers and the Patriots are still in that conference. You know, just winning chips left and right isn't easy.
No, Jacksonville has found the best offensive lineman in the history of the National Football League. They have guys on the second layer of the offensive line that are just as good as the first guys, according to Charlie.
Lance, by the way, how did that Jaguar offensive line do against one of the worst rushing defenses of football in the first round of the playoffs?
That's where they'll improve it.
Not
Eli comes there, Coughlin will get an offensive
line. They did struggle against Buffalo.
But
absolutely.
Let me give you my second point. My second point is about the draft. This is what I would do.
Oh, boy.
If we in the draft, I think the Cleveland Browns want to get their quarterback and they want Barkley, too. And so I think they would move from 4 to 2, which we would trade with the Browns to give them our second-round pick so they could get Barkley and their quarterback. And we'd get a ton of load of picks from that. And then we move out of 4, and we trade with the Bills, who want to get up into that top 5 and get Cody, the left tackle, Glenn.
Oh, you don't want him? You don't want him, Charlie? He doesn't meet your criteria? The left tackle?
No, I want him.
Oh, you want him.
Yeah, okay. He wants to get Cody Glenn for the fifth pick in the draft.
Okay. I got
you. And get a U-Haul of players so we can build up the offensive line, build up some linebackers. We can get Nelson. We should be able to get Price. We should be able to get that left tackle from Texas. You know, we
How
get
many
a
picks
U-Haul
do you have in the
players.
Top 10? Like 6 picks in the top 10? Charlie. I mean, are you going to show up to Buffalo and Cleveland and, like, spike these guys' drinks or something and get them in a room and tie them up to force them to make these trades?
No, he's going
to
show
It's easier said than done.
He's going to show up with an airplane. He's going to back it up, and then he's just going to welcome in the entire Bills team in the plane and then fly him to New York.
But they want Barkley too. They want both of those.
How
guys.
Do you know that? How do you know that? We look, haven't had a Senior Bowl. No, Charlie, hold on. Be quiet. We haven't had a Senior Bowl. We haven't had a combine. How the hell do you know what John Dorsey wants to do in
because
Cleveland?
He spoke to John Dorsey. Come on. Give him the benefit of the doubt. He had a conversation with him last night.
I know Dorsey's track record. He's always had great running backs in Kansas City.
Oh, Charlie, where did he draft, and when did he draft that great running back in Kansas City, by the way? What round?
He didn't. He was part of the organization, though,
what?
That did.
What? No. He did. He drafted Kareem Hunt in Kansas City. What round did he draft Kareem Hunt in?
I don't know. Third round?
Was it
Kareem Hunt later?
So maybe John Dorsey believes that he can find a good running back late in the draft.
Maybe he knows running backs and realizes Barkley is above everybody else.
I think he was like fifth. Oh, he was third. Okay, I stand corrected. Kamara and him were third.
I was right.
You're right.
Wasn't I right?
No, you're right. Well, John was right, too. So the both of you are right. Thumbs up. There we go. Everybody's right on the program. I thought he was later. So I was misspoken.
No, what I'm saying is that we could get a boatload of talent if we move down twice. And that's what I would do. Well, and that's why I would be the smartest GM in the history of the NFL.
It's easy to say that. It's harder to actually do it.
Because you have to have willing partners,
first of all. How do you know the Browns don't think they can get Saquon Barkley at four? Maybe they think Dave Gettleman. Wait, let me finish.
The Colts are going to pick a running back at three.
How do you know that?
Maybe
the Colts actually want to protect their franchise quarterback with a bad shoulder for the first time, and they want to draft an offensive lineman, too. Yeah. How do you know that's not the case?
And here's the other thing, Charlie. You're making these predictions, I understand, but, we haven't gone through
free
agency.
Maybe they want a pass rusher. The Colts haven't stopped anybody in 4 years. Well, maybe they want the pass rusher.
We haven't gone through free agency, and we don't know whether or not some of these teams are going
to
fill those voids.
That's a good point, too.
The thing that you're not taking into consideration, Charlie. You're acting right now on teams' needs, but then a month or two from now, maybe they don't need Saquon Barkley.
Guys,
or maybe they go in a different direction.
Lance is 100% right. I'm making a rule, okay? I'm not talking – for the month of January, I'm not talking about theoretical trades in the draft, all right? It's done. I'm not doing it because it's stupid, because you don't even know what the rosters are going to look like. So, Charlie, no more trade talks until after free agency with the draft, okay?
All right. I'm into free agency anyway. That's where we're going to get some plays. But one more thing. I said from the beginning – the Giants wanted Getz from the beginning, and they want Wilkes in the beginning. That's why Tisch is sitting in on this meeting, is because they're going to offer this guy the head coaching job today, because that's who it was going to be. The deal was done a long time ago, and all these other interviews have been window dressing.
Charlie,
and it's going to happen.
How can you say the two owners who have a huge role in this decision, who have never met this man before, knew they were going to hire him before they even sat down and interviewed him? What type of magical crystal ball from Lord of the Rings do they have to figure that out?
They said, Getz, who are you going to have for a head coach? And Getz said, I like this guy Wilkes from Carolina.
And that conversation could have happened. But that conversation,
that's the guy who I would pick.
And that conversation could have happened, obviously, when they were interviewing Gettleman.
Appreciate the call.
Actually, we should have asked him about the lobsters because, I mean,
Hey, good, he's still there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look,
where are the lobsters?
When you want the lobsters, because they're becoming more expensive in the wintertime.
Look at him. Look, he's looking for an out now.
That's something you and Jeff have to work out. They're Jeff's lobsters.
I've been trying to talk to him about it.
Well, Jeff's going to be here Friday. So
Jeff will be here Friday. He's on with me or you?
He's
on with me.
The lobsters this Friday. They're going to be coming this Friday. You guys are just going to have to deal with it. How's that?
Okay. Well, until I see it, then I'll deal with
it. That's fine. But I will text Jeff, hit me up on Twitter, and I'll get back to you, all right?
Yeah, tell him I'm going to send him on Friday if it's all right with all you guys.
Well,
okay?
Charlie, just out of curiosity, has the price of lemons and butter gone up too?
No. In the wintertime, it's hard to lobster, so the prices keep going up. So
okay, I just wanted to make sure that, some of the condiments are going
lobster,
to be.
Well, Charlie, you know what might happen too? Maybe Jeff decides he wants to, cook the lobsters in the spring, and then you can get a little bit of a cheaper price. So I will talk to Jeff. I'll find out what he wants you to do.
I will not advise Jeff to
do that. And I will get back to you, all right?
Okay.
Thank
no
you, Charlie.
Problem.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Take care.
You too.
What I was saying before we got off track.
Talk about trades in the draft. It's January 9th. It's more than 3.5 months before the draft.
A lot of things are going to change. Yeah. A lot of things are going to change.
Come on, man.
Needs for teams are going to change. Not that everybody drafts just for needs, and sometimes teams stack up in the depth chart. I get that. I'm not saying that just because a team gets a quarterback means they're not going to want to draft a quarterback.
What happens
but you have to take that into consideration.
What happens if Saquon Barkley fails a drug test? What happens if he shows up at the combine and I don't think this is going to happen? What happens if he runs like a 4.75 or something stupid
Stocks
like that?
Me.
Again, I don't think any of that's going to happen, but do you know how much can happen between January 9th and April 28th? When we were talking about the draft in January last year, what round and what part of the round was Miles Jack going to get drafted in?
Oh, we were talking about him as a first-round pick.
He was going to be a top five pick. You know where he ended up getting picked? In the second round. All right? A lot of things can change.
Well, I'll give you a perfect example. Sidney Jones was drafted by the Eagles, cornerback. Remember, he tore his Achilles in a workout. So, you know, all of a sudden, his stock went down. Teams weren't going to take a chance on him as early as maybe they were before the injury. Things like that changed the conversation. The other thing that I wanted to piggyback off of what Charlie said was, I don't think it's a stretch, John, that when they interviewed Dave Gettleman, I mean, they did this for every GM. We spoke to, you know, Charlie Casserly, we spoke to Andrew Brandt on the Giants radio network, and they said, when you interview a general manager, you're going to ask the GM, who are the guys that jump out to you that you would consider bringing in as head coach? So it's not a stretch, I don't think, that Gettleman may have brought up a name that he previously worked with.
Like Charlie in Portland,
Maine. Correct. Well, that goes without saying. I mean, you know, Charlie.
Paul DeTino would have been on that list.
Without a doubt.
Russ, yeah. David Deal, the whole nine yards,
when
right?
Charlie is the new Giants offensive coordinator. No, forget that. Charlie's going to turn down the offensive coordinator job. He wants to be the offensive line coach. Because all of those other positions are meaningless. He wants to be the offensive line coach so that he can get everybody in shape and get him playing at a high level. But I don't think that's a stretch for Gettleman to maybe have thrown out a few names. So, I mean, that may have happened, though, when they interviewed Gettleman. That didn't happen in November when Ben McAdoo was the head coach and they already planning that out. Come on. I mean, let's bring it back to planet Earth here.
Vito, Long Island, he's up next. Hi, Vito.
Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year to you as well, Vito. How are you today?
All right. I hate to bother you, but Anderson was Gary Anderson, the place kicker for the Vikings in 1998.
Well, Morden Anderson was the Falcons kicker in that game.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. So I was right. It was Gary
Morden
Anderson.
Morden was the Falcons kicker.
But Gary Anderson is one that missed the field goal.
Oh, you know what?
Minnesota.
I was looking up the Falcons.
Yeah,
I misunderstood you. Okay, yeah.
Thank you, Vito. Appreciate that.
All right. Do you remember, what do you think of Rojas this year?
I think there'll be competition for him in the spring, and he'll have to earn that job next year.
Well, wait a minute. Did they just sign a kicker to a futures contract?
There you
I'm
go.
Correct.
I think
so.
You're correct,
I mean,
yes.
I think that's a sign that they're clearly going to explore their options, which I would say for most positions is going to hold true.
I wouldn't be surprised if that ends up being the case for the punting position, too, to be honest with you.
Yeah, the punter was very inconsistent this year.
Yeah, and look, Vito.
And I think everything should be evaluated.
Competition for young players, especially with a new GM evaluating the team, I would not be surprised to see any of that.
Well, and Vito, you have to keep in mind, Gettleman has no ties to anybody on the roster other than Eli Manning and Zach DiAssi, who he said were the two. No, I mean, you could chuckle, but it's the truth.
And JPP.
And JPP, I'm sorry.
Yep.
Okay, so I stand corrected. Three guys he has ties to when he was previously here. So that means that if you're Dave Gettleman, you didn't draft any of these guys. You didn't sign any of these guys. You have no ties to them. You should be able to evaluate everybody.
Absolutely.
The best place kicker I remember for the Giants was Ali Haji Sheik for 1 year. Remember him in 1983?
Lance and I don't necessarily remember him.
Yeah, I can't say that he's ringing
Paul
bells for
DeTino
me.
Loved him.
Yeah. Paul DeTino had a poster in his room of him. That's how much he loved him. Yeah.
He kicked like 35 or 38.
He was good that year.
And he boomed it. He kicked it off his foot and it exploded over the goalposts. And the following year, he got hurt, and he was never the same.
Obviously, we are aware of his existence and the job that he did. We just weren't old enough to remember him kicking for the Giants.
Yeah, I don't remember it like
that's
it was
correct.
Yesterday.
No.
Yeah.
You got anything else for us, Vito?
Now.
Thank you, Vito.
All
appreciate the call.
Absolutely.
Call back anytime.
And
to hear from you.
And they may go after perhaps a free agent veteran kicker, too. I think that's a possibility. I wouldn't rule that out if they want to bring somebody in. I mean, you know, it's impressive what Robbie Gould was able to do with San Francisco. You know, Jimmy Garoppolo's arrival helped pick things up for him in the offense. And
how about, like, Matt Bryant with the job he's done in Atlanta? That dude, he's like – he's in his high 30s. He's kicking like 50-yard kicks all
still,
over the place.
I mean, look at Phil Dawson in Arizona.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that he was lighting it up, but he's also still kicking at an age that most people would think maybe he would hang it up. Here's another thing. Speaking of kickers, if memory serves me correct, when I was looking over the draft, Dave Gettleman drafted Harrison Butker, who's now with Kansas City.
Did he really?
Yeah, I'm actually – let me confirm it. I believe I'm right on that point.
And by the way, the other one thing I want to point out, too, based on Gettleman's draft history, as you look that up, of the five Carolina offensive linemen now, Trey Turner's made a Pro Bowl. Gettleman drafted him.
Yes.
Darrell Williams.
He was All-Pro this year.
Fourth-round pick at tackle. He was an All-Pro this year. Turner, I believe, was a second-round pick, if I'm not mistaken, at guard. And then Norwell, their other guard, was named All-Pro this year. And he was an undrafted free agent. So I know people are like, oh, the Carolina Panther offensive line stinks. Really? That's why they have a couple All-Pros on there and a guy who's made the Pro Bowl before in Trey Turner. They have issues at left tackle. No one's going to argue that. They spend a lot of money on Khalil out there, and he's not one of the top left tackles in the league. We get that. But they have some good players on that offensive line that required much less investment than it normally would for a premium type of player at that type of position.
Yeah, Turner was a third-round pick.
Third-round pick. I'm sorry, yeah. Even better.
Williams was a fourth-rounder we talked about who was second-team All-Pro
this
season.
And Norwell was undrafted.
So there's another one. And then even if you look at – I went back. I looked at free agency. He didn't necessarily go – I know he got Khalil in free agency. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, he wasn't signing guys left and right, a free agent offensive lineman. But in all of the drafts, if you take into consideration that he oversaw from 13 to 17, he drafted at least one defensive lineman in every year except one, and then he drafted at least one offensive lineman in every year but one. So he
That's
was consistently
surprising.
Looking at the trenches. Harrison Butker, seventh-round pick in 2017. So Gettleman did draft Butker.
He had a great year. Great year.
Yeah.
Though he missed a couple at the end of the season.
He did.
Including the one in the playoffs, which kind of hurt a little bit.
Yes, it did. But they lost for other reasons, too, Kansas City, not running the football in the
I was
going to
say, you don't think when you're up 18 points, only 11 carries for your Pro Bowl running back isn't the right way to go?
Clearly, that should do the trick.
And that's always, you know, and it, frankly, it was one of the reasons the Chiefs lost to the Giants. They didn't run the football enough in that game either. That's one thing Andy Reid, man, his teams get away from that run. Even when he was with the Eagles, when they had, like, DuStaley and Brian Westbrook.
I mean, how many times were people complaining that McCoy didn't get the ball enough? It's his M.O. for some wild reason. Yeah, I think that's a good point about the Giants game. I forget. You know, Alex Smith had multiple interceptions in that game, but they, you know, Travis Kelce tried to throw a ball deep down the field. And
he
that
tried
was
all
game.
Sorts of fancy stuff.
You get too clever.
And Kareem Hunt averaged 4 yards per carry, but only rushed it like 13 or 14 times. It was very, very odd. Anyway, he's a good coach. It's just sometimes in the midst of his scheming is good. I think he runs a team well. He's a good CEO during the week. He does all that stuff great. But some of his in-game managerial decisions, for lack of a better description, especially in the playoffs, he's had some issues.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling to me because his regular season teams are solid.
He's one of the best regular season coaches in the last 20 years.
Consistency. The line is consistent. It doesn't fluctuate much, even if you go back to his Philadelphia days. So, I mean, he clearly knows a thing or two. He's doing something right. You just got to make sure that, obviously, that you know your stuff when it comes to the postseason.
I think Andy
must be listening, so we took care of it.
Let's go to
my sources are calling in. It's crazy who listens in sometimes.
Let's go to Jason. He's on the other side of Maine, as far away from Charlie as he can be. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
We're great, Jason. How are you?
How you doing?
Good. I got a question for you, but first I got to say, I know you guys have little show segments on the website. You got to have something with you, John, and Charlie, because I love to hear you guys going at it on the air. It's great.
If you think I'm letting Charlie inside this building, you are out of your damn mind.
We don't have to have him in the building, technically, to do a segment. We could have him via satellite device, but here's the problem. Keep in mind, Jason.
Don't give him any ideas.
Well, no, if the prices of lobsters are going up, the prices of satellite trucks are through the roof in Maine, from what I heard. So good luck trying to get him to work out the finances for that.
Well, at least show some highlight clips throughout the years. But anyways, I just wanted to get your guys' opinion.
Sure.
You guys have you guys know a lot about the team, and you probably have a pretty good idea at least of some of the players that will be back.
Hope so.
Just wondering, out of the coaches that you guys have seen, if you guys were the GM, who would you pick for the head coach?
I think based on who's been interviewed so far officially, based on their experience and their pedigree, I would lean towards McDaniels. That's me.
And I would lean towards Pat Shurmur if I had my choice of the four that were interviewed, because I think the versatility of Shurmur's career, his head coaching experience, that's attractive to me for a team that I think needs also leadership as well. And I love McDaniels, and I think he's a great offensive mind, and I think he fits the label of redemption, and I think he's yearning for that opportunity. Shurmur to me has a little bit more polish on that.
And I think that's fair. Yeah. I also say this, and I think we stated this right away when the Giants made their move. I don't think there is a slam dunk, no-brainer, this guy's better than everybody else candidate. I think it's a completely a chef's choice type of situation here where, you know what, I might like this guy because of reasons A or B. That makes sense. Well, I like this guy more because of reasons C and D. That makes sense, too. I think it really just depends on what exactly Dave Gettleman, John Mara, Steve Tisch are prioritizing in their search, and that'll determine which guy ends up getting the job.
Okay. Well, that's all I have, guys. Have a good day.
Thank you, Jason.
Appreciate that phone call. You know, on the topic of head coaching, I'm curious your thoughts. I'm surprised Jack Del Rio's not getting much interest.
That's a good,
across the NFL.
And I thought he might get some interviews because his record as head coach is actually pretty strong.
Solid.
But this was a real disappointing year in Oakland, obviously.
Yeah, but do you really hold that all against him?
No, I wouldn't.
I mean,
I'm also surprised too. I think a lot of times though, Lance, for whatever reason, and I'm not quite sure why, I feel like when a guy gets fired from a job, it's rare for him to pick right back up that offseason. Sometimes
think that's
it
fair.
Takes a year. Was Andy Reid out of the year for a league, or was he one of the guys that got picked up right away?
I think he got picked up right away. I think Andy Reid went straight.
But I think he's one of the rare guys to do it. Most of these coaches, even the successful ones, very rarely do they end up being a head coach right away.
Now, part of that, though, I feel – I think you bring up a good point. I think part of it is some guys just want a year off to sort of take a step back and
go do
regroup.
Some TV work, make some
correct
cash.
Yes, you
get
see
a little
that.
Tan.
You know, and learn a little bit more about the league, go around the league, consult a little.
Maybe spend some time with the family, realize a year's enough, and then
absolutely.
You go back to coaching.
Correct, yes. So I think all you need is 1 year away from the family or 1 year to be around the family, and then you want to get back to head coaching. So I think that also plays a role. That
right.
It may not be because they didn't have the opportunity, but they just wanted a time to sort of just regroup. But his name is appealing to me when you're talking about a guy that has experience, commands a team, you know, is a defensive-minded guy.
Maybe he'll pick up as a DC on one of these new staffs.
And I know his name was being circulating and being considered for DC, but sort of things have quieted down. That's the only reason why I bring up the name. It's not just because of the Giants. It's just across the league I'm talking about.
One more thing very quickly. John Gruden, wow.
Well
paid. That's a big commitment for somebody that hasn't won anything in a really long time.
Well, I think that part of that is they're going to Vegas and they want the big name. That, I think, is a big part.
That's wonderful.
Of that. I'm not saying that's the right move, but
I don't
dismiss that.
I agree with you in
I think
terms
that's
of the
what
reasoning.
Mark Davis, the Raiders owner, is thinking.
But, boy.
Yeah.
I mean, the only good thing is I don't think he listened to him on Monday Night Football anymore.
Well, now we know where you stand on his commentary.
He's one heck of a football player. He's a great football player. I don't understand these officials at all. I don't understand what a catch is. Maybe you should pay attention, then you'll know what a catch is.
It's the shtick, as I like to say, when it comes to some of the commentators, especially him. But I think a lot of this
– and by the way, he's fine. He's not bad. But I never thought I necessarily learned a whole lot when I listened to him do Monday Night Football. I'll just say that.
Well, what if they brought in Frank Caliendo playing – John Gruden as his replacement. How about that?
No.
Would
I'll
you
pass.
Be able to survive that?
I'll pass.
Okay, because that's something I think they
I think Frank Kelling those time has come and gone. Dave's mad. He wants to eat lunch. We need to go.
All right. We can't, you know, continue the small talk, apparently.
Hungry.
My apologies. We have much more important priorities.
He's a big scoop of ranch dressing ready to go on that salad. He'll be ready to go.
It's the off season, so the people that normally have excuses for not eating lunch now don't have any excuses. Now they know they have some.
In fairness, I think most people want to eat lunch. I think they're just very busy during
absolutely.
The season, and they can't eat lunch.
No, but now I'm saying they have the time to go into the place to eat lunch and socialize. See, we're already here.
End the show. For Lance, I'm
that's
John.
The writing on the wall.
Me and Dottino tomorrow. We'll see you then on Giants.com. Have a good one, everybody.
Have a good one.